Welcome back to the Country House podcast, episode 20. Congratulations, chaps. We're at episode 20. That's a good milestone. And following on from a great episode about Highgrove House, we're going to be talking about Sandringham today. The Sandringham Estate remains the private country retreat to Their Majesties, the King Charles III and Queen Camilla. And it's got a stunning Jacobean-style exterior. It was built by King Edward VII and Queen Alexandra. And I suppose first thing I would inquire is, we talked about Highgrove, which was another country retreat. Is there a difference in significance between Highgrove and Sandringham in terms of purpose and function?
Thanks, Ben. So Highgrove was bought for then Prince Charles, now King Charles, as his country house when the late monarch Queen Elizabeth II was still alive. So Sandringham is always a resident of the monarch. It's not it is a private home of the monarch. In fact, it's privately owned by the monarch as opposed to owned by the state, like something like Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle are. But Sandringham will always descend to the monarch, from monarch to monarch, whereas Highgrove, being owned by the Duchy of Cornwall and being the creation really of King Charles III, Highgrove is not tied to the crown in the way that Sandringham is. So if Charles wanted to, he could leave Highgrove to Harry or someone else if he wanted to. It's very much his happy place that he's created, whereas Sandringham is one of the great royal residences, like Balmoral and Windsor and the palaces in London.
Sandringham is located in North Norfolk in the rolling countryside, and it is still very much a working estate with a working farm, and it has been in the royal family since the 1870s. And when the Prince Edward at the time bought the estate, there was a white Georgian house on the site. And it was soon after the purchase that they demolished this, and it was a new house then was designed by Albert Humbert in 1871 in the Jacobean style. And to describe the approach to Sandringham from the main gate, which was built in 1862, this beautiful black ornate iron gate, it opens to a sweeping drive surrounded by fine specimens of trees, and you arrive at a statue of Estimate, which was one of the Queen's award-winning horses. In fact, it won the Gold Cup at Ladies' Day, Ascot, 2013. And at the statue of the horse, you take a sharp right and a perfect approach, straight line to the front of Sandringham, and it appears this wide facade with a portico chair in the center, which is almost like a portico. It steps out from the house, and the royal coat of arms is on that. And across the roof line are gables, which add a sense of picturesque quality and an irregular composition to the facade. Tall chimneys, towers, it's red brick with stone dressings. And as you approach further, you descend underneath this portico chair and through an arched opening into the entrance hall, which in Sandringham is called the saloon. And this is very much a double height, almost castle-like hall with timber paneling. And it's an arched arcade and a fireplace in the center. And it's a place where the family gather. And since 1988, the family have been gathering there every Christmas.
Thanks, Connor. I think before we get on to family traditions, we know that Sandringham is where the royal family spends Christmas every year. In fact, the monarch traditionally spends about 2 months there during the shooting season. Sandringham is their favourite estate for shooting. Maybe we can describe a little bit more about the architecture and the collection that Sandringham boasts before we move on to some of the traditions, because there are so many lovely traditions of the royal family. But Connor mentioned about the red brick and the stone dressings. the style is Jacobean, so Neo-Jacobean, which is interesting because we've talked about a nearby house before, Blickling Hall in Norfolk, which is original Jacobean, also red brick with stone dressings. And in fact, Blickling was one of the inspirations for the creation of the new Sandringham. It was a local Norfolk stone was used in the dressing. And the principal rooms of the house are the saloon, the drawing room, the dining room, and the ballroom. And a number of rooms which are devoted to sports, including the gun room. There's a bowling alley, which is now a library, and the billiard room. So it's very much a recreational estate where the royal family would go to indulge in their hobbies, their sports, and so forth. So what we get is we get within the house an extraordinary collection, really, a lot of sporting art, and a mix of different periods. You know, Sandringham was built at the height of the empire, a little like Osborne House, and so there's a lot of imperial connotations in the decorations. So there's a collection of Oriental and Indian arms and armor gathered by Edward VII in his tour of the East in the late 19th century. The decoration of the house was actually done by Holland and Sons in the 1870 rebuilding. And in the saloon, you see a lot of decoration. And in fact, I think it was described by the architectural historian Jenkins as Curzon Street Baroque was the nickname it was given, which is a sort of Baroque revival style from the 20th century interwar period. So I'm thinking, of course, of places like the Baroque interior of Castle Howard that was renovated in that time, or there are a number of other examples of Curzon Street Baroque, particularly in London, as well as, you know, the 19th century Upton House was remodeled in Curzon Street Baroque. So Upton is a house in Oxfordshire, which is now in the National Trust, which was primarily built in the 20th century, but in this sort of neo-Baroque style. So there's a lot of different sort of neo elements to Sandringham, both in terms of its exterior architecture and its interior decoration. What I like particularly in Sandringham is the drawing room, which is described by Jenkins as the nearest Sandringham gets to pomp. And Queen Victoria recorded in a journal that the party from dinner adjourned to the very long and handsome drawing room with painted ceiling and two fireplaces. And in this drawing room, there are portraits of Princess Louise, Victoria, Maud of Wales, and Edward, all by Edward Hughes. Statues. It's really sort of a tour de force of late Victorian decoration. So it's a beautiful room with some incredible decoration and interiors that I think makes Sandringham feel very much like home. And it is interesting that Sandringham was one of the earliest royal houses to be opened occasionally to the public, even though it's a very much a special private home of the monarch.
Yes, the grounds were open since, I believe, 1908. But moving back into the house, the entrance hall of the saloon, that's a very masculine space. It's got oak panelling. And in fact, Princess Alexandra had a piano made of the same oak used for the panelling. And it used to have armour and hunting trophies on the wall. And it was a very, masculine, dark timber space, double height, tall ceiling, but now it's very light and bright with a almost white wall. But moving into the drawing room, this in turn is very feminine. So you can see the work of Princess Alexandra here and how she decorated this room. That is still evident today. It's very little changed since then. It's got a painting on the ceiling, beautiful layered stucco work, which shows the craftsmanship employed at the time, and the celebration of flowers and wildlife in the ornament. Because, of course, Sandringham is deep in the countryside. And as we've mentioned, that the estate today is still a working farm. And the king, in fact, is a keen gardener. And only this year, or was it last year, the topiary garden he has reinstated, which is with perennial, herbaceous perennial plants and bulbs, and also lavender, and it's geometrical shapes. It's a maze, a warren of planting on what was the lawn. And of course, this used to be an ornamental garden, but in the war, the garden was removed in place of planting vegetables. And after the war, it was replaced with lawn. So in a way, he is reinstating what was there. It also lends itself very well to the architecture of the house. It's there's a great richness to the architecture. It's not a flat elevation, as we would see with so many Georgian Palladian houses. Beautiful, but those houses tend to have a more flat facade. This, however, is I suppose perforated by canted bays, and with the gables which rise and fall along the roof line, and the play of tall chimneys. As you move around the grounds, there's a great dynamic sense to the house. It's constantly moving. It's constantly catching the eye. And it the geometry, the complexity of its design lends itself to having such an ornamental garden right in front of it, which, in line with the king's work in Highgrove, will be great for insect life and bird life.
Thanks, Connor. It is a beautiful setting. The gardens are really lovely. Norfolk is known for its good soil, which is why it's such an arable county, favourable for farming, and it's also very good for planting. But that's probably the main reason, along with the shooting, why the royal family bought Sandringham, because the house itself has actually been subject to a lot of criticism from architectural historians and critics over the years. I think going back to Simon Jenkins, I think he wrote that Sandringham was unattractive with a grim institutional appearance, whilst John Martin Robinson, who writes for Country Life magazine, wrote that it is the latest in date of the houses of the British monarchy and is the least distinguished architecturally. Whilst James Pope Hennessy, another sort of architectural historian and biographer who wrote a biography of Queen Mary, compared the house to a golf hotel at St. Andrews or a station hotel at Strathpeffer. And more recently, Clive Aslett, the former editor of Country Life, commented that the sporting opportunities were the main attraction for the owners rather than the house, which even after rebuilding was never beguiling. So again, this Jacobean architecture was never particularly popular, and it hasn't aged well. I mean, it's funny because some of our greatest Victorian houses are built in the Jacobean or sort of neo-Elizabethan or Jacobean styles, including houses like Highclere, which is famous as Downton Abbey. But Sandringham itself, it is a bit higgledy-piggledy. It's an extraordinary mess of different chimney stacks and towers, gables, protruding bay windows, and you know, service wings and ancillary buildings that don't make it. It's not a harmonious house, but it is, I think, has been called the most comfortable house in England by critics. So, despite all the criticism about its aesthetic appearance, it is very much a comfortable family home. And being built in the Edwardian times, it would have had the latest amenities. It would have had electricity and gas and heating and so forth, probably much earlier than other royal residences. So it would have been a particularly comfortable house, which is perfect for shooting parties when you're cold and wet after a long day of shooting on drives. You know, you want to go back to somewhere warm and comfortable, and Sandringham is certainly that.
Yes, one of the reasons it's possibly said that it looks institutional is that, of course, many institutional buildings were built in the 1860s, 1870s, have this Victorian aesthetic, but also the grand Victorian country houses, in comparison to a Regency or Georgian country house, they tend to be of such a substantial size that they did not, it did not favor a reduction in estate income. So by the late 19th century, with the fall of agricultural income, and then coming up to the war and death duties, houses of Sandringham size with the abundance of bedrooms, more than 300 bedrooms, a family would find it incapable of running such a house, whereas a Georgian-sized country house is far more adaptable to those sort of changes. It is interesting that the royal family, they did demolish a wing, I believe it was the 1970s, and there was talk of replacing the entire house in the 1960s with a new house. So the house does change as the family changes, as their wants, their needs, as it adapts over time. And in fact, King Edward added a bowling alley in the 1890s, which was later turned into a library. So it shows his changing forms of entertainment to turning into to a library in due course.
Yeah, you brought up the 60s plan to demolish it, which I thought was quite a humorous story about Prince Philip's disagreements with Queen Mother. He wanted to reflect a more 20th century monarchy by employing David Wynne Roberts, who did much of Cambridge University, sort of employing a very brick-based modernism with a lot of windows and much more open. And I often think it would have been really interesting to see a building like that. But I think I, despite the criticism, I think I prefer how it currently is than if that went ahead. And obviously the Queen Mother did as well. But I thought that was very interesting, something I didn't know about. Now, Jeff brought up that quote of Sandringham being the most comfortable house in England. And I think there are a lot of quotes from George VI, for example, and others talking about how much they loved Sandringham and the traditions. And I wonder if you could share what made this such a special and well-loved family home and the traditions that you mentioned earlier.
I think, Ben, for the royal family, Sandringham is tied up in the family and in memories and in association. So it's interesting, just touching on the collection, for example. I think it was Kenneth Rose, the biography of George V, wrote about how Sandringham has not a single good picture, piece of furniture, or other work of art. Yet it was later in country life, I think in 1902, that they wrote that at Sandringham, the royal family set a policy of preferring pictures that have associations to those which merely have artistic merit. And I think that really sums up Sandringham. Sandringham is very much the private shooting estate of the royal family and the associations that are wrapped up with the memories of different generations. So, yes, there are some extraordinary paintings by John Piper and Edward Seago. The house has an extensive collection of works by Fabergé, assembled by Queen Alexandra. But really, it's the memories and the traditions of the family at Sandringham that are so important. So Connor, perhaps in a second, can talk to us about Sandringham time, which is an interesting quirk of Sandringham. But maybe we start by talking about the Christmas tradition of the royal family at Sandringham. We know, because we see it every year on the television, that the royal family stay at Sandringham over Christmas and go to the parish church on Christmas morning, and locals and people from further afield queue up to meet the monarch and his family as they're walking up the path to the gate, to the church. It's iconic every year, seeing the royals in their overcoats heading up to their Christmas morning service. There are a few interesting traditions revolving around the Christmas tradition. So, for example, apart from that a number of monarchs have actually died at Sandringham, including the Queen's own father, the late Queen's own father. There are some other quirks, which are, for example, the Christmas tree. Now, we traditionally always take down our Christmas tree by the 6th of January, Epiphany. You know, the 12th day of Christmas is the time to take down the Christmas tree. The royal family leave their Christmas tree up till early February, because that was a tradition that the Queen's father, the late Queen's father, started. And she continued with that. So it's a quirk, you know, people always say, you know, you shouldn't leave, it's bad luck to leave your Christmas tree up after the 6th of Jan. Well, I think if the late Queen was willing to keep hers up till early Feb, then there's no harm in us doing the same. But Connor, maybe you could tell us about Sandringham time and how it related to the shooting season.
Yes, well, Sandringham is very much the home of King Edward. To understand King Edward, you must see Sandringham, just as to understand Queen Victoria, see Balmoral. And Sandringham time was a half an hour forward in order to have more daylight for shooting. And this was abolished in the 1930s. But it shows how the sporting day was the rule in Sandringham, and how to this day it's still very much a key tradition for the family. And Jeff, as you mentioned with the artwork in the house, it is a family home, and it's still used in that way. It's a place where the family, cousins, they all gather, and there are family paintings, sketches, embroideries on display rather than great masterpieces, for example. And in fact, in the Edwardian period, there was pictures of guests, actors, famous politicians who came to the house as guests were displayed on a board, and that's still there today.
Thanks, Connor. I mean, it's interesting if you think about the different generations who have been at Sandringham, how they built on traditions. So yes, they abolished Sandringham time, but it's very much been a place where monarchs have gone to rest away from the public eye without having to be as far away from London as Balmoral. So, you know, Windsor is very much, although on the edge of the Great Park, is quite suburban. It's very close to London. Whereas Sandringham is very rural, yet only a couple of hours from London, which is why it was chosen as the place where William and Kate set up their marital home, which was Anmer Hall on the Sandringham estate, which was their home right up until recently when they relocated to Adelaide Cottage in Windsor so they could be nearer the preparatory school for their children. But Sandringham is it's actually the, you know, it's probably worth saying that Sandringham is currently where King Charles is whilst he goes through treatment for cancer. So he's been there since February of this year. It's seen as a restful haven away from the busyness of London where monarchs can recuperate. And I think that's why so many monarchs died there, because it was where they went in their old age to sort of stay well and to get good air and exercise in a comfortable surroundings. So obviously we hope that King Charles III makes a healthy recovery and is back to duty soon, and likewise with Catherine, Princess of Wales. But the Duke of Edinburgh, for example, spent much of his time at Sandringham between 2017 and his death in 2021. So he was often photographed driving his Land Rover around the estate. And the Queen made her last visit to Sandringham in July 2022 to rest after her Platinum Jubilee celebration. So it's always been a place where monarchs and their family have gone to find rest and enjoy the beauty of the surroundings and the sport that's offered. Connor, what are your thoughts?
Yes, well, Sandringham is very much a community. Beyond the royal family, there is a community around the house, which on the estate, and the royal family have, since their purchase of the estate in the 1870s, played particular interest, King Edward did, in the development of the estate in terms of the welfare of the people who live there. He built a school. Princess Alexandra, of course, built a technical school to teach boys on the estate woodwork and other trade skills. A hospital was built, a beautiful Victorian water tower that looks like a folly. It's a beautiful work of architecture in its own right, was built by King Edward. And it had its very own fire brigade. People might remember a famous scene of the then Prince Harry and Prince William climbing and playing on the fire brigade back in the 1980s. And that was, incorporated then into the Norfolk Fire Brigade. But the to look at the estate as a whole, it's a good way of understanding the royal family's appreciation of those who work around them and the country as a whole in the way the estate has been managed and cared for over the years. And the people are at the forefront of that. The grounds beyond the house, there is an upper and a lower lake. And when people see the royal family at Christmas going into the church, and a lot of people are gathered around, and it's a famous scene that people see on Christmas Day, the church is to the west of the house. And so if you're standing at the back, the garden front of Sandringham, you're looking down the lawn into the upper lake, and beautiful specimens of trees from different types of cedar to oak and chestnut, and colourful ornamental trees. And crossing through this parkland, rising up the hill on the other side, you walk through winding paths until it comes out onto a green. And then across a straight path, directly in line with the church, is the approach that people will be most familiar with. Sandringham is open to the public and well worth visiting.
Thanks, Connor. I think talking about the estate, I think, extends beyond 20,000 acres, which includes, like we mentioned already, some of the finest shoots in the country used for royal shooting parties. But I think it also includes seven villages. So kind of talks about the importance of the wider estate. And obviously each of those villages has tenants. It has people who live in rented cottages who will be involved in things like the church services. You know, they'll go to their local parish churches and may see the monarch on one of the pews. But also thinking about the sporting nature of the estate. Sandringham has always been associated with the royal family's love of animals. So the grounds of Sandringham housed Queen Alexandra's menagerie of horses, dogs, cats, and other animals. And in 1886, a pigeon loft was created for racing pigeons given to the Duke of York by King Leopold II of Belgium. And interestingly, ever since, at least one loft for pigeons has been maintained at Sandringham. So, and we talked today about the Sandringham line, which is the bloodline of the hounds, the Labradors that are used as gun dogs by the royal family at Sandringham. They have a number of gun dogs which they keep at Sandringham, and if you can get a hold of a Labrador from the Sandringham line, you're very blessed to have a dog with a very good pedigree that will be very good at picking up birds on a shoot.
Yes, Jeff, the reason the line, and just as the breeding of the horses, it's so important, and why the Sandringham bloodline of Labradors, gun dogs, are so sought after, is that the Queen and anyone who worked on the estate, when good traits were seen, that perhaps bitch hound was then used to sire pups, and it's over time then you're breeding in the best traits. It's interesting that the stud was built in the 1880s, and then it was in the 90s that Persimmon, the most famous of Sandringham horses, was born. And Persimmon won his first race at Ascot and just had a tremendous career. And following that was a successful stallion. 10 years at stud, produced seven winners. And from his winnings, the kitchen garden at Sandringham was built. And when King Edward brought guests around the garden, he would say, "Persimmon built this." And in the stables, to this day, unchanged, is the stall of Simmons, Persimmons, with its tiled walls, dual aspect windows. It's just the most luxurious, beautiful horse stall you can imagine. And this was for the great stallion that was Persimmon. And so the bloodline is very important. Now, as we've mentioned in previous episodes about when it comes to, say, foxhounds or that are kenneled on an estate or horses in general, that breeding in the best traits over time is very much an interest of the estate.
Thanks, Connor. Being such a large estate, over 20,000 acres with seven villages, Sandringham is also home to a number of other substantial properties of note. So you've got the principal house, but we've mentioned already Anmer Hall, which is where William and Catherine lived before they moved to Adelaide Cottage. And Anmer Hall is a substantial Georgian country house in the village of Anmer. But there are others as well. There's Appleton House, for example, which is where Princess Maud and Prince Carl of Denmark lived. It was given to them as a present by the Prince and Princess of Wales. And Queen Maud of Norway, as she became, said of Appleton, "It's our little house. It is a perfect paradise." So it's, even though others, for example, considered it unattractive, and Appleton House was ultimately demolished. But then there's Park House, for example, which is a really interesting house, being the birthplace of Diana, Princess of Wales, whose father leased the house from the royal family. So you've got Park House, you've got Anmer Hall, you've got Wood Farm, which was home originally to Prince John, who was the youngest son of George V and Queen Mary, and he was epileptic and died very young, but spent much of his life at Sandringham on Wood Farm. And later Wood Farm became the favourite bolt hole of the late Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip. It was actually at Wood Farm that Prince Philip died, I believe, or in Sandringham House. But he certainly loved Wood Farm, and he, rumour has it, it's not confirmed, ran a truffle farm in the grounds of Wood Farm, which would not surprise me, because Prince Philip was known for his eccentric hobbies, such as carriage racing, amongst others. And then you've got York Cottage, which is probably the last and most substantial of the houses on the Sandringham estate. It's now used as the estate office, but it was built by Edward, Prince of Wales, as his sort of own little country bolt hole before he succeeded to the throne. So it's an eccentric house that has, again, faced a lot of criticism. My favourite quote, actually, about Sandringham concerns York Cottage, where James Pope Hennessy, I think it was, or another critic, Harold Nicholson, actually described it as a glum little villa with rooms indistinguishable from those of any Surbiton or Upper Norwood home. So he's essentially comparing York Cottage to a suburban house. Oh my God, what a place. The kings and queens' baths had lids that shut down so that when not in use, they could be used as tables. It is almost incredible that the heir to so vast a heritage lived in this horrible little house.
It was also called the bachelor's cottage at one point, because I believe before the Prince of Wales moved in, it was for the overflow of male guests.
Yes, it's an eccentric building, and worth looking up. We'll post some photographs of it, I think, on Instagram when we do a post on the Sandringham estate for our listeners who follow us on Instagram. But it's lovely that Sandringham is such a complete estate with so many villages and houses, as well as the impressive main house with its beautiful formal gardens.
Yeah, it's worth remembering that when you're there, there is a great sense of rootedness on the estate. The house that we see today, Sandringham, is 1871. But of course, there was a Georgian house before that, and a house before that again on the same site. And in fact, the house did feature in William the Conqueror's, I should say Sandringham featured in William the Conqueror's Domesday Book. And there is evidence of a house existing on the site in the 1290s. So there's a lot of history. It's not just a Victorian estate in that respect. And within the grounds, although what you see is an 1860s parkland design, there are trees there that have a wide girth to their trunk, incredibly old, far predating any building that you can see on the site. And it's upon seeing those that you realize you are on land that has been looked after, nurtured, with a long-term view for many centuries.
One last historical thing to note about Sandringham is that it was at Sandringham that the first royal Christmas message was given by George V in 1932 in a studio erected at the house. And the speech was written by Rudyard Kipling, the great imperial poet. And it began with, "I speak now from my home and from my heart to you all." And George V later died at Sandringham in 1936. And just one last little piece of trivia to emphasize again the sporting nature of the estate is we've mentioned already that the late Queen's father died there, but the day before he died, on the 6th of February 1952, he died. On the 5th of February, he had gone out shooting hares and supposedly was shooting conspicuously well and had planned another day's shooting before being found by his valet the next morning, having passed away of coronary thrombosis. So George VI was utilizing all that Sandringham offered right up until the day he died. And it just is a reminder of the royal family's stamina, their stoicism, their devotion to the countryside and country pursuits, their love of heritage.
King George V said, "Dear Sandringham, the place I love better than anywhere in the world."
That's a beautiful way to end. Obviously Sandringham, such a famous and beloved estate, and one that you should definitely visit if you have the chance. There's so much to see, even when you roll up and see those incredible Norwich gates, which were a gift from the local community as a wedding gift, I believe. So, you know, following on from that theme of the community being proud of it as well. So check those out. They're stunning. You can see images of them designed by Thomas Jekyll, who, if you know the Peacock Room, designed that with Whistler. So lots of trivia for you today. But thank you for joining us on this, the 20th episode of the Country House Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.